I am just trolling.
From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Hey, get out of here.
That's what you're calling.
Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hey, everyone. We are back here in the Playa Vista Studios. I am your host, Shahan Ahmed, here with Joey Galino.
Got a good one this week. Can't wait.
And also Alex Baker.
Bonjour out there in podcast land.
We will start kind of there. Neymar, right? That seems to be the story of the day. So Neymar, who came out and made a statement and said he loves Barcelona, loved his time there, but he said the team deserves a better board, was not extremely happy with how the club's hierarchy had been running. And there's a little subtle tone about, you know, some of the disagreement over the loyalty bonus he was due, and some people thought that this may have something to do with it. Then Barcelona comes out today on Tuesday and responds by suing the player, saying they will sue the player for 8.5 million euros for not complying with his contract. Now, in the immediate aftermath of that, we started seeing social media blow up with Neymar hanging with Luis Suarez, Lionel Messi, all his Barcelona buds all of a sudden, including former right back Dani Alves. And, you know, Neymar even took a picture with Piqué and said, you know, that he stays, se queda, like the caption that we all saw. Now, after receiving 222 million euros, which translates to over $250 million, suing a player for 8.5 million euros, $10 million, seems, well, petty, right? Considering Neymar's standing with the current Barcelona players, it seems to send the wrong signal to a player like Lionel Messi. Now, Barcelona president Josep Maria Bartomeu does not come off looking good in this saga at all. And it could conceivably get worse. Now, mind you, yesterday, Pep Guardiola, after Man City played, also came out and said that, you know, it's possible that someone will hit that 300 million euro Messi buyout clause, which translates roughly to $350 million. And, is right, Joey, because the rumor has been that Man City has been in talks with Messi trying to convince him to actually be, they would be the party that would actually potentially bring him over. This is all really blowing up in Barcelona's face, seems like. But, you know, with Neymar leaving, them having trouble with Coutinho in the transfer market, it seemed like the house was kind of on fire. And this lawsuit, or this talk of this lawsuit, seems to, rather than them grabbing a pail of water, they're lighting matches. It doesn't quite make sense in terms of their response. Now, another little level to this that I just want to touch on before turning it over to you guys is reports have come out, and it seems to be completely understood that Lionel Messi has not signed his contract extension, and he is currently in no rush to do so because he would rather the club focus on bringing in new targets. As mentioned earlier, Philippe Coutinho does not seem like he's leaving Liverpool. Instead, Liverpool is having talks with him to kind of try and get him back on board because he doesn't seem to be going anywhere. In Marca, Agustí Benedito, who previously ran for Barcelona president, is quoted in Marca as saying, Messi would be free as of January 1. Now, some background. Benedito is a longtime critic of the board, and so it's not a surprise that he would be the outspoken voice. However, Josep Maria Bartomeu, the president for Barcelona, is hardly instilling confidence at the moment. Could Messi go? Would you pay 300 million euros for 30-year-old Lionel Messi? And most importantly, should Messi go? Joey?
Here's the thing about the Barcelona situation, just leading into my answer to that. I think that trouble in the board and trouble with the higher-ups is not new necessarily, going all the way back to Joan, if that's how you pronounce it, Laporta, and Sandro Rosell, and now into Bartomeu. Like, there's always been issues. There was a vote of no confidence for Laporta. So, you know, and this is a soccer club, let's be honest. Like, a lot of these major clubs are very fuzzy with morality and rules and things like that. So that's one thing. But if you think about the stars that kind of built this era of Barcelona, and by that I don't just mean the recent years. I'm talking about like going back 10 years, something like that. You talk about Carlos Puyol and Messi and Iniesta and Xavi. And players like that, for all their brilliance, are not necessarily the kind of guys who are going to speak out against the club or are the first guys to get in the face of an opponent if there's a dust-up or something like that. You know, they're guys that kind of keep to themselves. They don't make a lot of headlines off the field. Neymar's not that. Neymar, and I'm not necessarily holding that against him. I'm just saying he's a different kind of player. He's got a different kind of attitude. And he's the first guy in this Barcelona run to really sort of rise up against the board and out them for these transgressions. And he's a 25-year-old who has his, you know, a lot of his prime left ahead of him, if he's even hit it, which is a scary thing. And so he made the conscious decision to leave. And so now you're seeing what he did and his different kind of personality, perhaps empowering the rest of the Barcelona team, whereas you wouldn't have seen it before. And I think you're kind of seeing that with Messi, where for the first time he's really giving you concrete evidence that, hey, maybe I am thinking about leaving. Now, as far as should he leave, I would say no. And I would say that because I think that Barcelona realizes, you know, again, this, for as corrupt as this board may be, they're dealing with a situation that is relatively unprecedented. Players like Neymar, we talked about this at length, simply just don't choose to go to other teams like this at this point in their career. And you have to give them a little bit of time at least to say, you know, here's how we're going to fix it. Here's who we're going to bring in. And I know that everyone likes to idealize Pep, Man City, joining them. That's not going to go away, I wouldn't think. It's not like Manchester City is going to lose a bunch of money tomorrow. You know, that offer will be on the table. So I think Messi has time at this moment to just kind of see where things go, see how things end up, because he will have that option later on. And if Barcelona doesn't act, and now their feet are kind of on the fire and they have to act, then he can make that decision.
One thing I'll add before throwing it to Alex is, in Marca, they did mention that even though reports have suggested that Messi may not, you know, may be considering moving, based on what they're reporting, he is very happy and
right.
He seems to be in line to do this extension. He's just not in a rush to do it currently. But, you know, beyond just Messi, Neymar, Barcelona, what's going on, Alex?
I mean, something's going on. I think when Neymar said that this current board is not really the people who should be in charge of the club, I think he's on to something, because you look at the Messi situation. Worse still is you look at the Iniesta situation, where you've got him coming out and saying he's really not that sure he's going to sign a new contract. Granted, Andres Iniesta is 33, but if you really want to hold Barcelona to the más que un club ethos that we all kind of like to hold Barca to, I think whether you're a fan or not, you do kind of regard them in that way. In the football community, you know, Andre Iniesta has been one of the greatest players in the club's history and certainly deserves a little more respect than he's being shown. And then you've got the situation with the transfers. Why was Barcelona never linked to Kylian Mbappe this
summer?
Good
question.
You know, Coutinho is a fine player, a well above average football player, but he's a massive step down from Neymar. Massive step down. I'm sorry, Liverpool fans.
Sorry, Coutinho.
Felipe, if you're out there, You ghosted me in the mix zone last summer.
Oh,
so.
And it all comes out. Willian, by the way, you're in our good.
You're in
our good book.
We love you. But there's not been so much as a peep about them making a move for Mbappe. So you got to wonder what's going on. You know they've got the money. They've got 220 million euros. What's the deal?
And if I can add to that real quick, it's interesting you bring up the club mantra, because we all, you know, these kind of corporate brands, and at the end of the day, that's what sports teams are. They're a brand. They love to kind of sell you on something. No one's bigger than the club. That's what Barcelona preaches. Cristiano Ronaldo is bigger than Real Madrid. I'm sorry. Sir Alex was bigger than Man United. So Messi is bigger than Barcelona. That's just not my opinion, but I think that it's a little naive to think that way. And so you got to do what you got to do to keep this guy, because you'll regret it if you let him walk.
I'll give you the Sir Alex. I'll even give you the Messi. I will not say that Ronaldo is bigger than Real Madrid.
I think he's become that.
Well, in the modern incarnation, you can maybe make an argument for during his spell, he's been at times bigger than the club. But I would say even this year's squad, he's not bigger than the club.
They don't need him. I'm just not saying they can't win without him. I'm just saying that he transcends. He's the guy that they would absolutely do everything to keep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I understand. I'm just – I will beg to disagree with one-third of your argument.
I got two-thirds. That's good. That's pretty good.
But getting more to the point, though, and just to kind of put it back, it is crazy that – after getting over $250 million, you decide to sue for this exact player. You decide to sue that player for not following through on his contract, $10 million. It is the pettiest of all things. And then the response of having your players, your greatest players, Messi, Piqué, who's known there as well, Luis Suarez, to be hanging out with Neymar, and then they just all go Instagram viral, social media. it is an awful look. You know, we're talking about corporate management and brands. Well, as a brand, Barcelona probably had one of the worst days they've ever had as a club. Like, this is a bad look. I don't think there's any way you can spin it and say, oh, yeah, you know, if they're trying to save face with this lawsuit and try and show that Neymar. Well, first of all, you know, let's go back to how he even got to the club. That was not above board.
No.
It was complete, like, illegal deals. Oh, yeah, so, you know, Neymar may be a bit of a hypocrite in this to some extent because he profited from this board being as shady and, like, backwards as they are. And now he's turning around and saying, you know, I think to my understanding or what I would imagine is that it went down one of two ways. One, he came out and said those comments and, you know, he's had a good start at PSG, 3 goals and 3 assists in 2 matches. And he came out and said those comments to kind of basically brush off the way that he was let, you know, on his exit, how he was dealing with the board. Or two, he knew this lawsuit was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, okay, yeah, you guys want to play in the media? We're going to go play in media. And
yeah.
I will tell you, right now, Neymar is winning.
That's what I said to myself when I heard him say what he did. Or once we found out that Barcelona was suing today, I immediately thought of Neymar kind of getting on the offensive preemptively yesterday and saying that. Because it just, you have to think that he knew it was coming. And you're right, like, he wants to play it this way in the media. And that's completely how it struck me. And I just think the timing of it, too, is just absurd. You know, you kind of alluded to it. Like, you're trying to buy players. And obviously, Barcelona is a dream club for a lot of different players across the world. So it's not necessarily going to torpedo your chances. But why would you do this right now when you're trying to get the likes of Coutinho or Ousmane Dembele or someone like that into your club? It's just, you know, again, I'm not saying it's going to be a huge hindrance, but it's just another misstep in a situation that's been completely mishandled.
Well, what message does that send to Messi? Let's say Man City does hit his buyout clause. Are they going to sue Messi for not following through on his contract? Like, that's the message you're sending. You want this buyout clause? We're going to get all this money? Oh, no, we're going to be real petty and bitter on your way out. Does not matter. You know, at the end of the day, you can't, you know, as much as they paid for Neymar, you can't say that was a losing investment.
No, not at all.
So like, as a business, as a brand, it's like, okay, he moved on, you lost somebody, I understand why you're hurt about it. But this is just below the standard of what we expect from Barcelona.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen these kind of little mini crises with Barcelona in the past. I think maybe the last time was under Luis Enrique when they were having trouble and Messi wasn't performing and people weren't sure if the manager was up to the job. They won the treble that same season. So This could amount to a tempest in a teapot, or it could be that we're going to see Barcelona go through a bit of a decline, or just through a – I mean, we talked about it last week. There's been a bit of a loss of identity. They're not bringing the players to La Masia the way they were, you know, a few years ago. We don't really know what we think about the manager maybe at this early stage yet. And then there's the club board where you've got this battle, it seems like, between Bartomeu and Laporta for sort of the soul of the club. And I don't, you know, I'm not an insider, but in my mind, Laporta's always sort of embodied the sort of Cruyffian ethos that we associate with Barcelona, whereas Bartomeu is maybe more the money guy. So, you know, is Barcelona's...
Well, he's got plenty of money.
He's got plenty of money, but they don't want to spend it. Even in Liverpool, they're saying that they didn't actually offer as much for Coutinho as they said they did.
And right.
So it's pretty weird what's going on there. So I think Neymar is not too far off base in his criticisms.
Just to wrap up my point here is I kind of think to something else that happened in a different sport this summer. I can't remember which member of the media described it this way, but when Chris Paul went to the Clippers and said, I want to be traded, you know, obviously that stinks for the Clippers. They're losing their best player. They're losing a guy who would fetch a ton of money on the open market. But this media person said, you know what the Clippers did? They acted like adults. They sent him to a place that he would be amenable to. They got a good package in return for him. And I know the transfer market's different. It's not a trade necessarily. But if the Clippers acted like adults, Barcelona is acting like children about this every step of the way. And it's really not making them look good.
So I want to ask you guys a question that has been on my mind. When I look at world football currently, and, you know, we've had a couple of weeks, couple of rounds of plays, you know, 3 rounds, you could even say, in some leagues. To me, right now, the most exciting player on the planet is Neymar. He's playing at PSG. It makes me want to watch PSG. And I don't think I'm alone in this. It's not that different than watching Real Madrid or Barcelona play against some of the lower league sides in La Liga. It's going to be lopsided, but the quality is what you're looking for and the way that he plays. I mean, last weekend, the amount of highlights, that one goal that he had, holy hell. And then the cross that he had for the, you know, acrobatic finish. I ask you guys this question. Is Neymar more of a draw right now for you guys than Messi, than Ronaldo? Is he the most exciting player and the guy you want to watch the most?
Yeah, I think he is, actually. Because, you know, those guys, they're a little bit older now, and they're still amazing. They're still probably, you know, the two best players in the world. But are they as dazzling on a week-to-week basis right now as Neymar is? No, probably not. Neymar does kind of more of the kind of jaw-dropping stuff that we used to see more from Cristiano and from Messi when they're a bit younger. Those guys will still score goals. They'll still win games. You know, especially in France, I mean, I have mixed feelings about it. It's this league where he can kind of indulge himself and do these sort of street football tricks that we know Neymar likes to bring, which he'd get criticized in Spain for. But
he did a fair amount of that stuff in Spain, too.
Yeah, but he'd get, you know, in the Iniesta, people like that would give him a dressing down for it. And I think we're seeing Neymar unleashed with these, like, rainbow flicks he's doing and stuff like that. So it's, you know, you can't help but be entertained by it. Is it the best kind of football that I like to watch? No, but it's fun. You know, I won't deny it.
It's a team sport, and right now he is the most exciting individual player on the planet.
Yeah, I think the question of if this is good for the league, if he's too good for the league, you know, we should maybe catch this a little bit because they did play a couple teams that are probably going to finish mid-table or worse so far in Ligue 1. But I think there's no question that he's comfortable in what they're doing because they're still kind of playing PSG. That is still playing Cavani through the middle and having Di Maria line up on the opposite wing from Neymar. So it's not an entirely dissimilar formation than what he did at Barcelona, only he knows how to succeed in that formation, and he's going up against weaker competition, so he can kind of be the steward from the outside, whereas Messi was sort of the guy who was that for Barcelona from the right side when they played the MSN attacking trio with the guys in behind them. And obviously he's got a ton of talent around him at PSG, and it frees him up to do the things like the little, I don't know, there's a word for it, but like the little outside of the right foot corner that's basically just a straight line ball into the box for someone to finish. And then, you know, the goal where he dribbled past everybody on the defense, you know, probably aided a little bit by the fact that, you know, Toulouse was already losing 5-2 and it was in stoppage time or something, but it was still a dazzling goal. And there's never really any question if PSG is going to win these games. My question is, like, if they can go undefeated throughout the entire season, because I think Neymar is that good and he brings that much of a dimension to them as long as he's on the team. And it is entertaining to watch. If you can, I kind of treat it like Real Madrid and Barcelona and La Liga. You know, not to disrespect Atletico, but they don't always play the same kind of entertaining, scintillating football. And you know that those teams are going to win, but they're also frequently going to look dazzling doing it. And I think this Neymar PSG side is kind of in the same boat.
Okay, so I think we've talked enough about Barcelona, Neymar, Messi, and all that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but energy drinks.
It's my beer!
And we are back. So let's move over to the Premier League. Let's move right into what we, for the second week in a row, saw as the most impressive side in the Premier League. Another 4-0 for Manchester United. And the way they turned it on the last 15 minutes was impressive. We're talking about Jose Mourinho making a tactical switch where he took off Juan Mata and added Marouane Fellaini. He also put in Martial for Rashford, but that's pretty much like for like. What ended up happening with that first substitution was United essentially had three midfielders with Pogba playing ahead of Matic and Fellaini. That allowed Pogba to get upfield, and he was everywhere. He seemed like every attack had him involved. Every time Manchester United took hold of the ball, he seemed to be rushing forward, and it really changed the dynamic of the game. Now, me personally, I think that we're going to see that lineup a fair amount, especially in away matches, when Jose wants to kind of mix in the midfield a little bit more. What did you guys take away from Manchester United these first 2 weeks? What stood out to you?
Well, I think the scoreline was ultimately a little unkind to Swansea because they didn't play terribly. At least I didn't think that they were four goals worse than United on that day necessarily. But then when I say something like that, I think about the title-winning teams that Mourinho's had, and you frequently say, oh, I don't think Mourinho's opponent was that bad on this day, blah, 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 but this is how it came out. And United did turn it on late. They did score three of those goals pretty late on. But, you know, Eric Bailly had a fantastic game. He had the first goal, and I really kind of thought it underscored the difference between the two sides. It was obviously a deflected ball in the box, and Bailly was so much quicker to get a foot to it and stab it than the Swansea goalkeeper and defender who was there. I apologize, I forget which defender it was, but they were just kind of like expecting the other to react. They didn't go for it. Bailly went for it. And again, that's kind of a trait of a lot of these Mourinho sides. They don't wait for things. They go right at you. It was kind of a customary setup for Mourinho lineup-wise. You know, he's going to try to limit the risks no matter where he is on the road. But for United to be able to just kind of flick it on like that, and our own Henry Bushnell wrote about this in his weekly recap and did a great job of kind of breaking down how United is able to turn over the ball and go back on the break and the counterattack so quickly and effectively. When they're playing like that, you know, it's going to be really tough to beat them whether they're at Swansea or Chelsea. And this was just, you know, it's very early, but through 2 weeks, they've looked like the best team in the league.
Yeah, Bailly, actually, the chance that he finished was Pogba had the header and hit the woodwork. Go figure.
That's right, yeah.
And then Pogba had another flick. Pogba just looked really, really good on this day, and especially when they really gave him the freedom when they added Fellaini into the midfield. And it's something where I think we're going to see plenty of that in big games, especially away. In knowing Jose, and I've followed his career for quite some time, I just understand some of the stuff that he likes to do. And in trying that late formation, I just saw a light switch go on and be like, oh, this is going nowhere. And we're going to see if United can play that well with three people in the midfield. Oh, man, I think Europe's in trouble.
Yeah, well, certainly the Premier League, I think, is. And you know, a couple of things that stood out to me. One, on last weekend's game, four goals, four different goal scorers. This is a big contrast to last season when Man United were criticized for being sort of over-reliant on Zlatan for goals. And it's true, without his goals, they would have been in big trouble. We're seeing this team is dangerous from all over the pitch. Any part of the attacking third, they can hit you. They've got weapons there. The other thing is two games against what you could argue is a pretty good West Ham team and maybe not a great Swansea team, but they've only allowed one shot on goal this season. So they're solid. They're solid, and I don't really see what I could call an obvious weakness in this team. Whereas, you know, if we want to spin it forward to Manchester City, we're seeing that there may be a bit more of a work in progress still, whereas this Manchester United team is looking like the complete article.
And one other point just to make about Jose is he has this habit of taking players and kind of putting them outside and kind of leaving them out of his eye line for a while, and it seems like they're out of favor. But then he usually always brings them back. And with Martial, I think we're starting to see that, where Martial was kind of discarded last year. You know, we saw it a little bit with Mkhitaryan as well. But with Martial, he kind of was the forgotten man last year once Jose came in. And now Jose's really been talking him up exiting preseason. And the first couple of weeks, we're seeing Martial play with that same hunger and really look like the guy he was that first year he showed up in Manchester. And, you know, it's something where, like I said, Jose has done this time and again. With Lukaku, same type of thing. He sent him away. He sold him. And when it came time for Lukaku to choose between Chelsea and Man U, he went with Jose. It wasn't with Man U. He went with Jose because Jose had continued to have those conversations with him in the background, Jose revealed. And because even when he sends these guys away, he seems to keep them close enough. You know, Matic was one of those guys that we thought possibly quit on Jose. Well, Jose was like, no, come to Man U. Now he's like an integral portion of the team. It's like everywhere you look around. Same with, you know, Mata was a guy where Jose wanted nothing to do with him, seemingly, even when he showed up in Man U. Now Mata's starting the matches. It's a very unique thing, but I think we're at that point in the Jose cycle when all the games he's played with all these players, he's got them motivated because he's brought them back under his wing, and they're ready to follow him. So United looks great.
I think Jose doesn't like to develop players. You know, he doesn't have a great history of bringing through young talent. He likes to sort of let these guys go develop somewhere, and then when they're ready, he'll use them. But, you know, you look at his Inter team, that to me is still like maybe one of the greatest achievements of Jose's career, was winning the treble with, you know, a team that a lot of people say weren't all that great. But a lot of those guys were sort of older in the last sort of hurrahs of their career. With Chelsea, he had sort of an older, experienced team last time he won the title. So he's not the guy to develop these young guys, but you're kind of right. He does know when they're ripe for the picking, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and for as much as he does kind of blow things up is the wrong term, but like for as much as he does kind of like put his footprint on the different clubs that he goes to, I just look at United's backline right now. Antonio Valencia and Phil Jones have been there for a long time, so there's continuity there. Is Phil Jones one of the best center halves in the world? No, no one would confuse him for that. Is Antonio Valencia a great fullback? He's fast. I mean, I don't think anyone would say that he is, though. But they've been there, and there's continuity there. And instead of trying to act smarter than the room, Mourinho's like, you know what? This is good. This we can work with this. This is what has been here, and this is kind of like a consistency, a through line to what was going on before under Louis van Gaal. So let's keep it in place. And I think that he gets knocked a little too much sometimes for being chaotic and kind of ripping things apart. I think he is very pragmatic in terms of keeping around what works and kind of, again, kind of establishing that through line.
One thing I'll just add before we move on is, for me, Valencia was arguably their best defender last year. And just in terms of consistency, and the guy is just, he plays with that energy, right? And it's tough to see, even when you have all the talent in the world, Valencia has this special energy that you can't teach.
Yeah, and you're not going to beat him for pace either, lot of teams are trying to bring in.
Like he'll get sent off before you beat him is the type of thing. And it's a fine line, but he walks that fine line better than most people who play with that type of kind of crazy energy.
I mean, there's a reason he's been there as long as he has and has pretty much maintained his starting spot in and out of from Fergie through Moyes to Louis van Gaal to Jose.
Well, let's move on then, I guess, to some of the other teams that are not top of the table. You know, we had a couple big matches last weekend, and I just want to ask you guys, what stood out? What did you learn from Manchester City? Let's start with them. What did you guys take away from their performance? And, you know, they kind of labored until Raheem Sterling came on as a substitute, and seemingly 10-man Manchester City turned it up a notch and beat Everton, who had looked pretty darn good.
Didn't beat Everton. They drew Everton.
Yeah, sorry, I misspoke there. But in the second half, it seemed like they beat Everton.
Well, yeah.
In the first half, you know, Rooney scored a well-taken chance. Everton actually outplayed Man City for me for the first half. And it was odd to see Sterling come in, who has not been able to start the first two matches. But when he came on, the energy was just different.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to create chances, get some shots off, and he ended up being the guy who scored the goal to level it.
I'll tell you what's been surprising to me about City is how much they've labored to score. You know, I mean, I realize they have found the back of the net three times this season, but God, it's taken them a long time in both games to get anything.
Why do you think that is?
I think... Well, I don't think that Aguero and Jesus have figured each other out. I feel like they make the same runs. I feel like they want to attack the same space. So I think that limits the places that someone like David Silva can put balls into if you got two guys making the same runs.
Who's better, bald-headed David Silva or haired David Silva?
Haired David Silva. I am not used to that look at all yet.
I think it's Pablo Zabaleta in disguise every time. I'm like, I thought they got rid of him. Why is he playing so far up the pitch? Get the back, Pablo.
The hair's, it's pretty odd. I think that's part of it. I think that Guardiola can overcomplicate things. Case in point, why play Sonny as a wing back? You know, he's an attacking...
you only spent the most money ever on fullbacks.
Right. You've got plenty of wing backs. Why do you put Sonny there? Because that's where Everton got their goal, is down that flank. So, you know, Guardiola, I feel like this is what's hurting him in the Premier League, is the overcomplicating of things and the inflexibility to sort of adapt to the Premier League.
Yeah, I think there's a certain feeling out process and figuring things out on Pep and City's part, which is natural and it's understandable. I'm actually not going to be too hard on City through their first couple matches because I think that the way it's set up for them, you know, Brighton is going to battle relegation. No one's saying that they're going to be, you know, anything special this season. However, When you go on the road to face a team like that that's just come up to the Premier League and they know what they're facing and they're going to try to bunker down and nick one on the counter, that can be kind of tough to break down. That's to me personally, that's a little bit tougher of a match than United's opener against West Ham, which is a team that has plenty of opportunities to go forward and probably has enough confidence in themselves to think that they can score. So, again, am I saying West Ham is or Brighton's a better team than West Ham? No, but I think it's a different challenge in terms of the confidence level and how they set up. And then you go and you face this Everton side at home, and Everton and Brighton both kind of said the same thing. I agree with all your points, Alex, but they're still saying, you know what, we don't care how much you're trying to figure it out and how the pieces are trying to fit together. You still have Aguero. You still have Jesus. You still have De Bruyne. You still have David Silva. You still have all this incredible attacking talent. So we are going to line up a little bit differently. And Everton did that yesterday. They lined up with three in the back, but also five across the midfield. There was a decided wall there, whereas in the first match against Stoke at home, they were a little bit more open. Excuse me, with their tactics. So there's a combination of that all going on. And then the Kyle Walker card the two things that happened in the first half, Rooney obviously scoring against Manchester City again, and his tweet to that effect yesterday after the match saying hello to old friends, so to speak.
Yeah, 200 goals in the Premier League, by the way.
200 goals for the
Premier
League.
Only Alan Shearer has more.
Which, you know, hats off to Wayne Rooney. He's been fantastic for a long time. But that goal and Kyle Walker sending off, which was a bit soft, it seemed like, were really kind of complicated things. And so these are the kind of games, you know, whereas United has been cruising and getting points in an ideal fashion, City has been kind of eking out points and results that you have to win the league, whether it's a win where the other team's trying to bunker down or it's a draw from a game where it looks like you're really not going to get much of anything. And I know Mourinho knows this better than anybody, so I'm not saying that United is necessarily screwed in this department. But again, I'm not going to be overly hard on City based on the circumstances so far.
Yeah, just as a reminder, you know, United won their first three matches last year. City won their first 10 across all competitions. Neither team won the title.
Yep.
So there's a long, long, long way to go. One quick shout I do want to give is to Calvert-Lewin over on Everton. He seems like the perfect player to have Wayne Rooney playing as a number 10 because this kid just runs and is so fast. Every time they wanted, they could find him with the ball, and he had enough composure to actually take the ball, not lose it, provide somebody coming in on, you know, a little bit later as a trailer. And Rooney obviously isn't going to be beating anyone for pace. The goal actually came from him kind of like finding the space, not really rushing into it, and just taking the chance the second it came. Yep. It was you know, first time he reacted. He didn't try and overpower. In watching that game, I was sitting there going, you know what? Wayne Rooney could be pretty good this year.
I have a feeling. Yeah.
He's got two and two.
It's a win-win kind of Rooney's over here like, I'm scoring like crazy. I'm having fun at my old club, Everton. And United's like, that's great. We're ripping it up without you. So yeah, both parties should be happy.
Yeah, I think overall everybody won in that transfer. But, kind of to transition on forward, do you guys think Everton is going to finish above Liverpool? I mean, those are the two sides that we always talk about, right? They're the two Merseyside. I mean, the way Everton's looked, and, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson just came in. He hasn't even really come into the squad. That was a way at the Etihad. You know, say what you will about Man City, Everton played them pretty darn even, and they probably deserved that point. They could have had more if Sterling doesn't come in and just change the complexion of that game. So do you think right now, and based on what we've seen, do you think Everton is a legitimate chance to break past Liverpool? Because me personally, I don't think Liverpool is going to be in that top four.
I think they do. And I think that, you know, Liverpool, the old line is from Glengarry Glen Ross, are you ascending or descending? I think it was. And Everton is clearly on the ascent right now. The way I kind of, you know, took a dump on their hype train last week. But there's no denying the fact that this team is they got a great result at the Etihad. They won their first game. They're doing well in the Europa League. So, you know, and Ronald Koeman's finally getting his players in there and kind of morphing the team to how he wants it to be. So that, and they're probably going to make some money off of selling Ross Barkley here very soon. So who knows if they reinvest that or, you know, whatever it is, they're going to be seeing a bit of a positive on the transfer market in terms of funds. And Liverpool, on the other hand, you know, with a big manager comes those kind of big expectations, and Jurgen Klopp has been anything but bad since he joined them. You know, he's guided them back into the Champions League. He's brought kind of this thrilling attacking style, the gegenpressing and all that, to Liverpool. But the question is, you know, if you talk about where they finished last year, they finished fourth. They did get back into the Champions League. And the teams ahead of them were Chelsea, Tottenham, and City. And Tottenham and City certainly figure to be in that top four again, or at least two of the top contenders for it. I personally am still a believer in Chelsea, and Chelsea did well this weekend.
We'll talk about Chelsea next
in a second. So that, you know, you look at that, and then you look at how much Manchester United's improved, and how much Arsenal might have improved with Lacazette, at least maybe in terms of getting back into the Champions League. It's like, well, where is there really for Liverpool to go? This squad is not good enough, especially if they sell Coutinho, to really seriously challenge for the league title. So then what are you talking about? You're talking about falling back into the Europa League? Like, again, it just seems like Liverpool is kind of flattened off for the time being and might be getting worse if they sell Coutinho, whereas Everton's on the way up. And just by that rationale alone, I think you have to say Everton has a chance.
Yeah, Everton certainly was a lot more proactive in the market this summer. I think Liverpool stood still and let it all happen around them. You know, I know there's 10 more days or so, but Everton made some good signings, and Ronald Koeman is turning out to be a really, really capable Premier League manager. So, you know, will they make the top four? Probably not, but could they finish against Liverpool? Oh, yeah, definitely they can. Right now they look like they will, but as we say, it is pretty early days.
All right, let's move on over to Tottenham-Chelsea, the London derby at Wembley. This was an eventful match where Chelsea scored three goals and won 2-1. stunning header by Michy Batshuayi. I mean, stunning header.
Absolutely fantastic.
I don't think I've seen a striker
top
score.
Class finish.
Best yeah. header score
so
by
good
a striker.
It froze Courtois.
Yeah.
That was an own goal in case somebody did not catch that. But Marcos Alonso stepping up and taking over for the absent Diego Costa. Morata had a really good chance early and really should have buried it, but his header was off target. It was a good match. Overall, you know, Tottenham had some great moments, and Chelsea probably deserved the victory.
So. Alonso might be the best free kick taker in the Premier League right now, and I think in light of David Silva's current state, he might be carrying the baton for best Premier League
yes.
hair at the moment,
right.
too,
yeah.
Marcos Alonso.
You know, when I was watching that, I was going, wow, Marcos Alonso. It's one thing the way he buried it, because he definitely, that was unstoppable. Yeah, in watching that, what really stood out to me is the guys that he stepped up and took that free kick over, because he wasn't even the one who placed the ball. It looked like, you know, David Luiz had to walk away from the free kick because there was no space for him to take it, and he's a world-class free kick taker. You know, Marcos Alonso, that first goal was impressive. The second goal, to actually hit it near post, even better. I got to say, you know, I'm very, very impressed with how good he's been. And I actually think, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that he deserves to be in the Spain squad when the World Cup comes around.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, Chelsea, you know, kind of lucked out to get him to have that type of incredible performance, because he's not necessarily known for being their top goal scorer by any means. And, you know, okay, they went and technically got an away win at Spurs. Nobody really... You know, you can't make the Wembley excuse for the rest of the season. But right now, Chelsea doesn't have Eden Hazard, who is their best player. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, this was a massive win. Any point in the season, this would be a massive win. So it's going to be interesting when they actually do get their best player back. This team could be really something to deal with. I mean, there's no reason to believe that Chelsea would not possibly come back and have another championship run.
That's why I said after last week, I was like, I'm not going to dump dirt on Chelsea by any means. And Alex, you said something last week that I want to bring back up again. You said that it didn't feel like a Chelsea match, the opener against Burnley at home at Stamford Bridge. You know, you had Antonio Conte was in a tracksuit instead of a tuxedo and a suit. The team just didn't seem like it cared. It didn't have the fire that it had last year, and I agreed with that. And I thought Sunday, you know, say what you will about how the match was won, that was the Chelsea from last year that we saw. That was the tactically pragmatic team that played with a spirit and played with a hunger. And I actually think that was best illustrated in what happened late. You know, we joked about Michy Batshuayi's own goal, but that happened directly after he came on and Pedro came on for Alvaro Morata and Willian. So they were set up already to kind of see the game out as opposed to keep attacking. Then Batshuayi scored the own goal. All of a sudden, you're looking at splitting the points with Tottenham. And then they found it in within themselves, Alonso specifically, to finish past Hugo Lloris and grab all 3 points. And now you could say, well, Lloris should have saved it. You could say, well, the Spurs, you know, is not going to hope maybe for them, hopefully struggle that much in Wembley the rest of the season. But it's like going back to kind of what I alluded to earlier with how teams win titles. It's like you could say woulda, coulda, shoulda. It doesn't matter. Chelsea got the points. Chelsea slid David Luiz up into the midfield, and I'm sorry, but if you got Conte and Bakayoko on either side of Luiz before you get to the defense, that's going to be pretty impregnable, even for a team like Tottenham that's got a lot of good attacking talent. And the game was kind of played specifically in the area between the midfield and the top of the Chelsea box, by and large, because Tottenham dominated possession, but that's what you kind of expect out of a game like this. And I think seeing that from Chelsea, whereas you're maybe wondering if Conte is going to finish the season after the first week's result and if the team's in turmoil, all of a sudden you talk about going on the road and getting 3 points from one of the best teams in the league, you're suddenly having a conversation again about I think things might be actually fine for Chelsea.
Was that the most Spursy finish of all time?
I mean, we said last week that Chelsea certainly need they need a response this week.
And, yes.
And yeah, I think they got one. But
that was it.
I think that Spurs it up a little bit, I guess. You know, they dominated possession. They had three times as many shots on goal, twice as many shots overall. And yet their only goal was an own goal. And you got to say Chelsea were ruthless in their efficiency. Two shots on goal, two goals.
The way you started that comment was the audible definition of shaking my head.
I was trying to keep the schadenfreude to a minimum as an Arsenal fan. But
Well, that is the perfect transition. Because speaking of Spurs being Spurs, how about Arsenal being Arsenal?
Oh, wow.
Ugh.
Arsenal put the arse back in Arsenal last
yes,
weekend.
Yes, they did.
Has anything changed, Alex? How do you feel right now?
I feel kind of like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, pretty much. You know, we've seen this one before.
So contract extension at the end of the year?
Yeah.
Certainly a 2-year contract extension, possibly a deadline day trolley dash coming up for 3 or 4 players, of which one will work out. You know, it just seems like the same old Arsenal. And maybe we had possibly an inflated sense of hope from the first week because, yeah, they won, but they did let in 3 goals at home to a Leicester team that, you know, is going to finish mid-table probably. So, I think there's cause to be worried. That it's the same. You know, we got a good striker in Lacazette, but we still don't have a strong center back. We still don't have a reliable central defensive midfielder. And, you know, how long have we been having that conversation? 4 or 5 years, I would say.
Yeah, by the way, the Lacazette goal, he was onside. And
he was.
It was a heck of a finish on his part. I mean, yeah. It was beautiful. But even then, I mean, Arsenal had so much of that ball for that match. And they really should have found ways to score more than the one,
sure,
you know, hairline offside chance that was ruled out.
They should have. And there's no you mentioned ferocious with efficiency, Alex, for Chelsea a couple minutes ago. Arsenal was the opposite of that. I mentioned that Mourinho is very pragmatic about things that are working, even if it means, you know, a big-name player is going to be left out of the side or whatever. Rob Holding, Arsene Wenger is not that. I don't know why he demoted Rob Holding. I don't know why Skrodan Mustafi, who's a center back by trade, was getting the start at right back in the back three. The fact is they played with 2 wing backs, Sead Kolasinac and Nacho Monreal in that back three, and it came back to bite him. It was a great score. It was a great goal by Jesse. But the fact is that it shouldn't have been, you know, that was the wrong kind of defensive formation to trot out. And then, you know, you mentioned the spine of the team, and I agree. It's who in the world, let alone the rest of the Premier League, like, who is scared by Granit Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey up the middle? I'm sorry. They're, for all the skill that they might have going forward, and even that sometimes is questionable, especially in Xhaka's case, you're not going to go to Stoke and win 3 points. And this isn't even Stoke of the old. This isn't the grinded out, you know, defensive-minded Stoke. This is a Stoke that wants to be more open and wants to be more attacking. So Lacazette, yes, he was probably onside. The spirit of the rule, he was onside. And the strict definition of the rule, probably not. But, you know, whatever.
I could argue a couple penalty shouts, too.
And there were a couple penalty shouts. But the thing, and here's the other thing. If this Arsenal side did not have the history it does, we would probably be sitting here and saying, well, you know, kind of what we were saying with City with all their new additions in year two under Pep. Like, right. Well, you know, we're not going to go too crazy about it. We know that they're still kind of trying to come together. This is the Arsenal, though. This is the same Arsenal side we've seen for the better part of 12 years now that's not strong enough no matter who they bring in, that's not tactically pragmatic, all these things that go against them. So at this point, you have to say it's an indication of more of the same. Now, does that mean they can't finish in the Champions League spots? Of course not. That's what they do best, even if last year did happen and they finished fifth. But the fact is, there were some bad signs there this weekend, and I wouldn't be overly optimistic.
Yeah, you know, I think the really frustrating thing is Stoke is definitely not a bad team. Obviously, they have some real world-class players. The Hesse goal was beautifully taken. But Arsenal has a better team. They dominated in every possible statistic. Possession, shots on goal, corner kicks, you name it, they dominated it. And yet, they found a way to not win.
Yeah.
And that's what we see time and time again from Arsenal, is they do dominate these games. They do seem to control them. And they pretty much dominate every statistic except the one that matters, which is the score.
Mourinho teams and this Chelsea side under Conte, teams like that find ways to win. Arsenal under Wenger, for however long it's been, finds ways to lose.
You know, you were saying who's scared of Granit Xhaka. I would say most Arsenal fans, every time a referee is taking a card out of his pocket.
This is true.
Like, is it red? Is, you know, it red? Okay. Is it red?
Oh. And to be fair, other players, because they don't know when they're going to get their studs in their shins or something.
Yeah. I think, if I'm correct, I think we've gone through all the top clubs that we wanted to touch on. Are there any other teams, Newcastle, anybody else you guys want to mention who's either disappointed or anything that stood out for the first 2 weeks? Now, as a reminder, it's only been 2 weeks. We understand that there's a long, about like nine and a half more months to go. So far, what have you been impressed with, disappointed with? What stood out to you for the first couple of weeks?
Alex, Huddersfield Town.
Technically second in the table, before tied for top of the table.
Two
Huddersfield
wins.
Town.
Well,
two
I mean, everybody's pretty much everyone's favorites to go right back down. And they like Joey said, they're 2-2. So obviously the Premier League is treating them pretty well so far.
Well, I want to give it up for Tony Pulis. Great job. You're already like 6 points on the way to your customary 37 before you shut it down and then become the most boring brand of soccer we've ever seen. That was very sarcastic. It's remarkable how consistent his sides are in doing what they do, which is doing just enough, mucking it up, being really boring, and staying in the Premier League. He's never been relegated as a manager, so that is commendable. But it's in all seriousness, I actually do want to shout out Leicester. I was very high on them last year. I thought that they would challenge for a Champions League spot. I didn't think their league title was a fluke. It's looking more and more like it was, but fluke in the sense that they're not going to win the title again. Not flukish in the sense that they are a really strong, solid Premier League level side. And I think that, you know, they were kind of unlucky to not win at Arsenal in the first week. This week, they secured a victory, so they've got 3 points. And, you know, it seems like Craig Shakespeare has them back in a place where they're sort of like a Southampton-style club, in that once they got to the Premier League, once they stayed in it after a year or two, now they're saying, you know what, we can operate as one of these mid-table sides pretty consistently. And frankly, there's nothing wrong with that, so good for them.
I just want to point out that not all of us feel the way Joey does about Tony Pulis. Tied for
Henry
top.
Does. Me and Henry does. Will be on this island together.
Tied for top of the table, Tony Pulis. I just want to drop that out there. He's got...
Wonderful.
For me, you know, just barely to touch on, I think I find it fascinating that a team like Newcastle, which was considered one of the strongest sides potentially ever in the championship, comes to the Premier League and is really struggling. And there's a good chance that this team won't survive. And I think, you know, the way that I know this is that the friends that I have that are Newcastle fans seem to all ask me, do you think that they'll make it? Because they haven't really bought that much at all. And so they're like, do you think the squad's good enough? We haven't really done enough. And the worry that I see in my friends who are proper Newcastle fans, that they may actually go back down, just serves to prove the difference between the Championship and the Premier League.
It does.
You can be by far the best team in the Championship, and you're at the bottom of the Premier League, and that's being generous. I mean, you really need to completely transform your squad, and the gap is it's amazing to me. I find it fascinating.
Well, and consider they have a manager who's, you know, just about as big a name as Guardiola, Mourinho, and the rest of them.
And they do have some Premier League experience in the side, too. It's not like this is a bunch of guys that they brought together in the championship and kind of rose back up to the top flight. I have one quick solution for Newcastle. DeAndre Yedlin. When he's healthy, start him everywhere.
Shocking that Joey would pick the U.S. men's national team members.
I thought you were going to say sign Pulisic.
Well, that's what everyone should do.
Well, we don't want them to win the league.
Right, right.
And
there's
just
only one Pulisic to go around.
One quick note just before we wrap up. Earlier you were talking, you know, we were talking about Man City and kind of going through. You know what would fix Man City's attacking woes? Messi.
Yeah.
just throwing it out there, Pep.
Messy.
All right. Well, I think we're out of time here. For Joey Galino, for Alex Baker, this has been Shahan Ahmed. Thanks for listening. And as always, you know, follow us on Twitter. It's at FC Yahoo. And also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/FC Yahoo, all one word. And take a look out for all of our content. Thanks for listening again. Bye.